is 3:59 p.m. It is Thursday. Right now, it's April 22nd. My name is Gerald Hopkins, and this is the Rebuildables Podcast and Show here on KCOU 88.1 FM. I was offline off the air last week, but I'm beyond excited to get back this week. A little bit early just for a little bit of love, right? I have a special episode planned where we're going to talk about the Super League. Why are we talking about the Super League when this is a show about rebuilding teams? Because I can. And because I have a great idea, I'm going to explain to you why the Super League shows how hard it is to rebuild a soccer team. I've been waiting to do a soccer episode for a long time. Now is my chance. This is the perfect opportunity to show the divide in teams, the divide in money that goes towards these teams, and everything else in between. But you already know how we start all these episodes. The first section here, what's going on in the sports world? I have one big bite because there's news today. Again, we are in Columbia, Missouri here on KCOU 88.1 FM. Shout out to Ben Arnett, our sports director here at KOMU. Got to get all those things right here. Broke the news today that Mizzou Wrestling is moving to the Big 12. That's big news because Mizzou Wrestling is actually one of the better programs that Mizzou tends to offer, and at least athletic-wise, has done fairly well. If you don't know, okay, Mizzou is in the MAC Conference, or is now, used to be, in the MAC Conference, the Missouri, the MAC. So they had some, I want to say, lesser competition, right? But the Big 12 has some very, very good teams, especially Oklahoma State. Still, the pinnacle of wrestling is in the Big 10, but this is a significant move. Missouri, again, wrestling has some success. I don't have all the numbers off the top of my head. This is a very big announcement. That it was crazy to see this moment. You're just like, oh, wow, look. We're seeing Missouri make a move, be aggressive, and try to take advantage of the fact that we have, you know, they have a good team. And there's probably going to be some more money involved. What will this do to Missouri's success? I don't know. This is a very early and keen announcement. I wanted to shout out Ben Arnett, though. It's a very timely thing. There's a press release around noon, and it was very vague. It was like, at the Hearn Center, something is going to happen. We're going to press release at 3:45. There'll be immediate availability just to be there. And Ben Arnett was the first one to figure it out. Good to him. It was a little cryptic, but not anymore. In other world news and kind of getting into, because it did affect everything, the Derek Chauvin trial has been completed. Last couple of days, we've had reactions from a lot of different groups, including sports figures, obviously. He was guilty on all three charges, which is a huge step in a everlasting fight towards equality here in our nation. It's not going to be an easy one, obviously, but it's also something where, as great as it is to see our justice system at least do what it was supposed to, right? We see somebody die wrongly because of a police officer abusing their power in more ways than one, and then the group around him being held accountable for letting him abuse that power. George Floyd should still be alive. It doesn't matter how else you put it. He should still be with us, and he is not. That would be the justice, would be that for both of them to be alive. We don't have that. There will be some solace. There is some solace in knowing that there wasn't a misstep in that trial, that there wasn't a break, that just because the way the law defined X, Y, and Z, that let this man go free. But it's still, at the end of the day, we're still missing a human being because a policeman officer, a black man, took his life over a $20 bill. A counterfeit $20 bill by obsessive force by an officer. Doesn't matter how else you spin it. We should still have George Floyd on this planet. He should still be here with us today. The influence of that moment obviously changed the whole world around us, including the sports world. We saw it in the NBA bubble particularly the most, right, with different social justice ideas on the back of jerseys, the Black Lives Matter on the court. But it doesn't mean all of it. It's one step to just see our justice system be correct, because it hasn't been before. It has failed these same people on the same problems many more times than it's been successful and right. It's good to see it be at least a little bit better, but man, is the fight still going. I really don't want to play a song afterwards, but I'm going to play something to bring us in just to get us to the next section of this podcast. We're going to get talking into the Super League, and it really went by fast. This is the idea from some of the big money players to try to find a way to get more money. I'll explain that and more, and how it talks about rebuilding in a little bit. Again, you listen to KCOU 88.1 FM. We'll be right back with the Rebuilders Podcast and Show. Keep tuning in.
get time to realize it's right before my eyes, and I can take it if it's what I want to do.
And we're back with more Rebuildables podcast show and show here on KCOU 88.1 FM. Again, we're talking about the Super League, so I've had to bring out some of my FIFA favorites, including FIFA Street. Very underrated, right? The most recent FIFA Street. The other ones are obviously historic, but this is also a very great game. I wish I would never got rid of it. But man, the Super League was crazy. This idea, this concept, and it dissolved even quicker, right? We're like, oh, wow, the Super League, this is going to happen. It's ruining European soccer. Now it's gone. European teams are all out of it. There's like three, well, not European, especially the English team. All out of it in like 3 minutes. But no, just like that, in 48 hours, this whole thing's kind of gone. But let's bring you back to that first announcement here. Here are the 12 teams, because they deserve some of this public shaming, that were the founders or the founding teams. First, AC Milan. Second, Arsenal. Third, Atletico Madrid. Chelsea, Barcelona, Inter Milan, Juventus, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Real Madrid, and Tottenham Hotspur. Both of the, some of the London teams, right? My favorite, Arsenal. Sadly, I was very disappointed with the Arsenal Gunners this week, with especially Stan Kroenke and everybody else who's behind this issue. But these are the 12 teams you should laugh at, make fun of, and we're especially talking about because they're the founding group. They're going to add more people. There's supposed to be 20 competitors. They're going to kind of find a way to get them in. But these were the 12. And here is the simple goal. These teams were losing money, right? The pandemic was not nice to anybody, except if you're like in tech stocks. And the money that they were getting from the Champions League, especially because most of these teams are in the Champions League, was just not enough. The revenue split is a little more even. You might be going, Jerry, I don't even know who these 12 teams are. I don't know where you're talking about. I know we're talking about some teams in Europe, and you're talking about this Champions League. What's the difference between the Super League? What's the Champions League? Where are these guys from, etc.? There's a lot of questions, if you've never watched soccer, that I'm going to try to answer in this little section here. So let me explain the Champions League the quickest I can, right? So the 12 teams we've talked about, some of them are from Italy, some of them are from Spain, some of them are from England. So let's go down the list again. AC Milan is an Italian team. Arsenal, a team in Britain, England. I'll say them interchangeably. Atletico Madrid is a Spanish team. Chelsea is a British team. Barcelona is a Spanish team. Inter Milan is an Italian team. Juventus, also an Italian team. Eighth, Liverpool is an English team. Man City and Man United, both English sides. Real Madrid is a Spanish team. And Tottenham Hotspur is a English team, unfortunately. So we have these 12 teams from different parts and regions of the world, especially of Europe. They all play in their own year, like own country's league. So Arsenal, Man City, Man United, Tottenham Hotspur, Chelsea all play each other. They all play, and I should throw Liverpool in there too, not to forget them. They all play each other in the EPL or the Barclays League. Barclays League. So every once a week or maybe twice a week, they're going to be playing teams from only England. So we'll call this like SEC football play. You know how we have different conferences for college basketball, college football, but this is when we get there's league interleague play. We look at the SEC record. We do the same for these teams in Europe. And now all these European squads, let's say like we'll call England the SEC, we'll call Italy the Pac-12. I don't know. That can get really messy really quick. But the Champions League does is it takes all the leagues from Europe, all the major leagues. And I want you to understand something here. Right now, to best understand the way that this is constructed, we have to look at this sport as like a combination of baseball and college football in one. And I mean this because you have the minor leagues in baseball and you have the different regionalities of college football that kind of combine. So a lot of how you rebuild a team in soccer or in football is kind of like the baseball minor leagues. And think of each league also having three or four other baby leagues or smaller leagues that are professional but are not at the same level. And I know this is getting all messier and messier. You're like, Jerry, you haven't got anywhere near the Champions League. Well, to get to the Champions League, we have to understand league play. We have to understand these different leagues for the different countries. And what makes soccer, especially in Europe, so interesting and keeps a lot of these people from all over their country close to home is the fact that there's always a belief you could be in the best league. Let's take those minor league baseball teams. But instead of them being affiliated straight with their major league counterpart, let's say the worst two teams from baseball every year had a chance to go down to AAA, and the best two teams from AAA could go up to the MLB. It would make it where, oh man, I don't have to worry about the White Sox being relegated this year. They're really good. And, you know, I'd hope the Cubs get relegated every year or they get down tiered to single A. This makes it where there's an incentive to not just be floundering, be in the middle, but especially if you're not in the major league, like the Barclays Premier League, right? The one in England that you might see way too early in TV. It gives you an incentive to be there because, one, that makes the most money. That means you could be shown in America. Granted, not everything's built around America, obviously. But you have the most amount of resources and opportunities to play the best teams in the world, and then also the best teams in England, Spain, France, wherever. So now that we've understood that soccer is built primarily from the league play, from playing the teams in your own league in your own country, once you have the Champions League takes the top tier of the best teams from those best leagues. So it takes the top four teams from like the Premier League. It takes like four from La Liga, the Spanish league. Takes some from Serie A, which is the Italian league, et cetera, et cetera. Except all teams in Europe or all the countries in Europe that have a top tier soccer conference, right? Have at least some representation. For some of those smaller countries, like a Dutch team or a team from the Netherlands, may have to jump through some more hoops, or they may not have four teams in the Champions League like the Premier League does. So if you're already lost, I'm going to try to break this down here of what I just explained. All of this stems from league play. League play is divided into the big major league, which is the one that you could probably see on TV or ESPN Plus if you're a diehard soccer fan in America. Then there's smaller leagues below it. The smaller leagues below it have a chance to find their way to the big league, but they have to be the best in the leagues below them. And it's kind of promoting yourselves up. And then the worst teams go down the scale. So the worst teams in Europe are not playing in La Liga or in the Premier League. You don't see them. They're in like League 2 or League 3, and you don't know their names. Or if you, at one point they may have been relevant, and now they've floundered. So we're only talking about the upper echelon of soccer right now. And from that point, now we're talking about the teams that are in the best league of each country. We're talking about the best teams, specifically the top four or five from these countries now going and playing in a big tournament to determine the best club team in the world. So That means, basically, you have to be really good to be in the Champions League. So if you took nothing away from that explanation, know that to be in the Champions League, you have to be very good. You have to be one of the best teams in Europe, no matter where you are in Europe. So if you're a very good Dutch team, you have to be very good. You can't be a sub, even if you're a subpar team in the whole landscape of soccer, you have to be the best in your respective league, in these big leagues, to go all the way up. So this makes a couple things happen at the same time. First of all, this is supposed to be the big competition. This is the one where if you win the Champions League, you are considered the best club in Europe. Or if not, one of the best, because you can still find a way to not win your country's league, but also win the Champions League. That's really technical. Let's not get too deep right now. But also, the revenue has to go a little bit to these smaller guys who are also making their appearances. So would it be fair to just be like, oh, we have four Premier League teams and we have a Dutch team. We're not going to give any money to the Dutch team. Congratulations. No. Do these Premier League teams and these bigger tier teams in Spain, France, etc. make more money? Yes. Especially because they usually have more money poured in to their league systems and etc. So they're already getting a pretty good bag. But then people were losing money. And if you want to trace the idea to the Super League to anything, it's money. It's all it is. It is just sitting there and talking about the Champions League revenue split was not good enough for these really, really premier type top teams in the European world. So the guys in suits said, hey, this is our time to finally take away the fact that we make less money than we think we can and go and make as much money as possible by creating this super duper league. And this is, again, this is an idea that has been flirted with a little bit. Not super duper, but it's been flirted with. But it's like, oh, we're never going to do that. You know, that'd be crazy. Well, throw billion-dollar losses into the fray, and things happen. So now, here's the intended goal, was to make a lot of money. And you could say, well, were the billion-dollar suits in this decision actually going to go through with this? You don't know that. I don't know. They might think they are, but at the bare minimum, they could sit there and say, you know what? Now the Champions League is going to look at us different. They know we can do it. We were not afraid to try. So, again, if I have not made any sense so far, at least take away the fact that the whole point of the Super League for these soccer teams is to make as much money as possible. But it didn't really go well, partially because, one, it got horrible backlash because it was dumb. And I'll explain why it's dumb a little bit later. Two, it caused the expenses of the fans. Playing at least when you are in your country's league, right? So let's say we're in the Premier League. I'm an Arsenal fan. I live in London. You know what would stink to try to do? Go travel the whole world all the time if I'm a diehard fan and want to see games. It is kind of nice to go and, let's say, stay in London and go play Tottenham. Or let's go down to Liverpool. I'm still in my home country. I'm not going throughout the world, or at least throughout Europe, to try to watch these games or see these games. There is a regionality to soccer that is very parallel to at least Southern football and Southern college football. There is something to be said. There are crazy fans. There are crazy fans for both of them. But there's also a pride in, I'm a Georgia Bulldog fan. I know we haven't won the SEC, but this is yours, our year. There is a pride of being a Florida fan. There are those crazy Florida fans. Let's look at Ole Miss fans, right? There's so much pride in Southern football, right? Especially Southern college football. And I think you could translate some of that to European soccer. There's a regionality tied to this. And because there's this idea of relegation, the fact that if you really stink, you could make less money and play in a less important tournament and do everything else, gives one people hope. It's like, oh, you could flounder really bad and then, oh, we could pick up your spot. We can come in. We are a smaller city, but if we really rally behind our team, we can get them into the Premier League. Then we can watch Premier League games. We can go travel to Chelsea. We can go to London when they go on their two-game trip to play Arsenal, then Tottenham. That's crazy. We never went to London because all the teams in London usually make a lot of money. So, and even where the bigger cities, right? Let's say a London, right, where there's multiple clubs, you still have those regionality ties there too, because part of where this, you know, some of these rivalries come from. I was like, what side of the bridge are you on? And stuff like that. The regionality of soccer made this such a hard thing to actually try to make happen, because you're trying to make the game's already global, but they were trying to take away the regional ties that make league play so important, so fun to watch, make it accessible for fans. If you live in London, you don't want to have to go and watch most of your games in Spain. If you're Spanish, you know, if you're from Spain, do you want to have to go and travel to Germany just to go watch Barcelona play Bayern Munich? I think Bayern Munich was in this announcement. I don't remember off the top of my head. You know, like, you don't want to be in that situation. But if you want to go, if you're a Bayern Munich fan from Germany, you can go to Dortmund. That's a trip, but it's like I can make the one trip for one weekend to go watch us in league play. And, oh, we beat them in the league. We beat them in the German league. We are this and that. There's a lot of pride that comes with it. It's like winning the SEC East and the West, etc. There is pride in when Georgia beats Florida. It's the same thing when Arsenal beats Tottenham, or when Georgia or Florida end up higher in the SEC East rankings. Oh, we won it this year, etc., etc. Or we were at least higher ranked than you. Whatever. But again, debt was all in all this. In all of this was money. Even the regionality ties, these owners were ready to break some of that for money. And I wanted to take some quotes from the Barcelona's president to see how he was going to frame the idea of why this was an unnecessary thing. And he goes, "It's absolutely necessary that the big clubs, given that we generate a lot of revenue, we want to have the capacity to have our say in the sharing process. Also, we believe that it's important that this is accompanied by an attractive competition based on sporting merit." Quote, end quote. Let me give you another quote before I talk about what we get into this, really. "Because if the big clubs don't have these resources, football will be damaged. There will be an institutional harmony and a willingness to think about all of this." Quote, end quote. Here is the idea you're trying to frame. The big boys need to stay big. Right now, this is our chance to keep ourselves big. If we get small, the whole ecosystem of soccer is gone. And we need that ecosystem, because if we don't have the ecosystem, you're not going to know what's going on. And we bring in a lot of money to, let's say, La Liga. Because, yes, there are some very important teams in Spain. And you can name two of them, usually, if you're an American soccer fan who don't really pay attention. Right? You can name Real Madrid and Barcelona. There is a merit to that. The idea that there's some world brands in between some regional brands. But making your argument that the rich need to get richer, or the rich have lost a little bit, we need to keep the status quo, usually doesn't work, and it's a weird argument. And when we come back from break, I was going to save this third part because I tried to explain as much as I could. I'm going to explain why that doesn't really matter. Because let's think about it. We already said, you know, working for the status quo, maybe not the way you want to go. You know, we could probably do a little bit better than that. But even with it, right? Like, I struggle to see how if you're a fan of a team that's not constantly in the Champions League, was not one of the founding groups, or thinking about being a founding group, you like this. Because rebuilding a soccer team is really hard. And I'm going to explain why in just a minute. You're listening to the Rebuilders Podcast here on KCOU 88.1 FM. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what is this moment state, and why it matters to a team that's in the middle, a team that's trying to rebuild, and kind of the slap in the face that gave. Just these 48 hours. I hope you really enjoy this third part. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. This is one of the best FIFA songs to ever exist. John Newman, Love Me Again. I have to put it a little bit more in the background. Just like you heard it when you would listen to and play FIFA. God, the memories are flying through. But I left you a little bit on a cliffhanger. I know, I did it. I'm sorry, okay? I know I'd like to get to the point, but I had to. Here is the cliffhanger. I said, what does this mean for rebuilding teams? What does this mean if you're trying to rebuild a team, if you're in the top leagues of European soccer, but you're struggling? You know, like, we need to get better. Maybe we need to start over a little bit. Let's start bringing some people in. Well, it means a couple things. There are really two ways you build a team. And the one thing about European soccer that makes it harder to necessarily rebuild is the idea of relegation. You can't just have a bad season and go on. You can. But if your bad season means you get relegated, you're going to lose a lot of money. One of the reasons relegation and promotion is also very important is because even right now, we were talking about how these top tier clubs are not making enough money to satisfy them. Well, if you're not one of those top teams, you don't have billions of dollars just sitting around, massive donations to the club, etc. You know, getting that TV revenue money from being in the Premier League is huge, especially if you're a team that has some talent, but a couple $1 million added to your bank account or a couple multi-million dollars, that seems like a lot. That really could help. It does. And so when you rebuild a team, there's really two ways you have to think about it. You can either do one of two things. And so you can think about two ways. You can do one of two. You can either buy the team to fit a playing style, or you get young talent through what they call the academy. I think buying is pretty simple, so I'll save that for a second. The academy is basically the AAU scene of European soccer. The biggest difference, it's not built around a school schedule. Especially when you get into these older camps, it's not like you're going to Arsenal's academy, and you are also in high school. Or you get through, maybe, let's say you actually balance out the both. You don't go to college. You go full-time into the academy. You're training like a professional until you get pulled up. If you don't get pulled up, good luck. It's a little more of a risky time. Granted, there are more than one team in Europe, and if you're in Arsenal's academy, let's just say, you could also play for a lower level European team. There's a lot of ways that can go, but the academy is supposed to be these minor leagues, and this is more, I made the comparison to baseball. This is where that baseball comparison really fits. Also, is it's like that's that AAA, AA, single A season, system below each team. So if you don't have a lot of money so you cannot pick out the best players in the world, you're going to have to try to find them. You're going to have to try to do a couple of things. And Barcelona is actually very famous for this, even though they have a lot of money. What Barcelona did a fantastic job of was making all their academy players learn this specific way of playing soccer. It's called tiki-taka. It's moving the ball really fast, quick passes, don't hold on to the ball a lot. And those quick passes will tire out defenses, and then you can score and by having constant movement when you have the ball. But what made it really great, and this is where you see Lionel Messi really, you know, be successful, was the fact that he was short and fast. Want to know what benefits short and fast? Moving around a lot. And everything like that. But for some teams, if you're a Chelsea, a Manchester City, or even an Arsenal, you have your manager. And your manager says, I want this guy, and this guy. And I'm not going to say they will obviously name drop, right? You know, Juventus said, we want Ronaldo. Cool. But they might say, we need a center, guy who plays midfield. We need him to pass the ball really, really well. We want long passes. We want passes that go through defenses. His main skill is passing. And the manager goes, we want the best in the world at that. Well, that's how Arsenal gets a guy like Mesut Ozil. Or Manchester City says, we want a very fast winger, a guy on the right side or the left who could just run faster than anybody and have great control of the ball. That's how Raheem Sterling goes from Liverpool to Manchester City. And it's not a direct trade. It's a trade of money. So we hear out these buyouts or transfer fees. It's like instead of a free agency market where a team signs X contract, the contract already goes. But instead of going, oh, I'm going to go and trade my goalkeeper for this striker. No, I'll give you 150 million euros. You can have player Y. And some of the big soccer clubs in the world do that. They also have the financials to do that. It's an investment. So just like that, oh, yeah, we can spend a 15 million, you know, 150 million to bring in one of the greatest players in the world right now, because that will make us more money in the long term. But if you're a team that just can't do that, this moment stings that much more, because that's what these teams are trying to do. They're trying to go back to the fact that they could just do that when they wanted to have that power balance that the Barcelona manager talked about. That, you know what? We had to lose some money. We just can't buy whoever we want, or we can't have the ability to purchase extreme, you know, talent from other places and give away a sum of money that's so good or so overpricing a player. And again, talking about players as prices is really weird and very problematic. But, you know, we're putting a number on this person's head that you just can't refuse as a club. We can't do that as well. Oh, God. What are we going to do? Okay, now we're going to make the Super League. We are going to make more money because we have to keep that going. We have to keep that power structure in place. For once, it felt like, oh, these guys are getting knocked down a little. Okay, and I don't want to see people go in debt. And there is some validity to knowing, yeah, you do need some of these world powers. You need some of these very successful groups, because if you don't have them, then they lose money for everybody else. So if you're already on the fence about losing money, because let's say the pandemic and you're in the middle of the Spanish league, no one really knows who you are outside of your regional, you know, region, and maybe some, you know, groups in Europe have some pockets of fans. Well, that financial hit's going to hurt. But what happened is, instead of going, we're going to find a way for everyone to get that little bit more of money so we can support everybody and make it a better competition, it was the, we need to get these extreme money. We need to get the money into the hands of the people who already have money. We need to get that money back. We need to get a little bit more. And it kills. It kills to say out loud. It kills to think about. Because you're like, wow. It's not only selfish. It's not only painful. It's not only annoying. But it shows that power dynamic of, you either have to build the team by buying it or developing it through your academy. By getting those people who are super young, taking a chance on them. You know, risking, taking constant risks. To find a player that perfectly fits a system to win games. Those big clubs don't have to do that as much. It's easier to take the best players in the world and make them fit in a system or let them shine. That's why they're there. You know, it's not, you know, Pep Guardiola is a fantastic manager. But you know what also makes some of his managerial skills great? When Kevin De Bruyne makes some of the greatest passes I've ever seen. Or he has some of the best touch in the world. Not as hard, and not, you know, you can say pass here, here, and there. If you see this, do X, Y, and Z. It's easier when that guy can say, I'm going to do W because I'm good enough to do W. Not every team has that luxury. So if I'm a middle tier team, not only am I frustrated at the fact that I'm losing money, but it just reminds you that, yeah, maybe European soccer isn't as favorable as we think. That regionality might have got stopped the moment, but there is those powers above us. And for a game and for a system that has one thing that can actually kind of stop teams from being bad and having teams show up every week, you're like, why does this, you know, it makes you feel less important. Every week, someone can lose to somebody because everybody needs those points to not be relegated or to win the league or to make that Champions League spot. It makes those league games important. But a moment like this takes away from that. It takes away from the fact that every weekend, if you snag 3 points from a team that's number four, trying to make the Champions League, and they lose, and they're the fifth seed in the whole Premier League, and they're now not in the Champions League, you made a difference. That would have been all gone. It wouldn't have been the same. And that's why this was so frustrating. And it already shows how hard it is to rebuild a soccer team. You can't just do it on the fly. You can only do it if you have the money to do so, and if you have the money to do so, you're probably not. These guys go where the money talks. And it's just like, what else do these people want at times? And that's why this small moment and this 48-hour span reminded everybody that this idea of being overly competitive and everyone having the same idea and chance, maybe it doesn't exist, or it's not as much there. You can point to Leicester City, and Leicester City was the one-off. But if it takes one Leicester City 100 years to do it, is it really that balanced? Is it really that fair? I'll leave you guys on that. This has been the Rebuildables Podcast and Show here on KCOU 88.1 FM. Next week, we'll have something else going on. I got to figure that out, but we'll get it going. Thank you for listening and tuning in. And until next time, peace.